For some reason, I feel to play that Anna Hotz quote from last night again. I don't know why.
If you are aware of a state which you call is, or reality, or life, this implies another state called is, or illusion, or unreality, or nothingness, or death. There it is. You can't know one without the other. And so as to make life poignant, it's always going to come to an end. That is exactly, don't you see, what makes it lively. Liveliness is change, is motion. And motion is going like this. See, it goes all up. And be gone. So, you see, you're always at the place where you always are. Only it keeps appearing to change. And you think, wowee, a little further on we'll get that place. I hope we don't go further down so that we lose what we already have. But that is built into every creature's situation, no matter how high, no matter how low. So, in this sense, all places are the same place. And the only time you ever notice any difference is in the moment of transition. When you go up a bit, you gain. When you go down a bit, you feel disappointed, you'll meet loss. You can go all the way down to death. Somehow, there seems to be a difficulty in getting all the way up. Death seems so final. Nothingness seems so very, very irrevocable and permanent. But then if it is, what about the nothingness that was before you started? So don't you see, what we've left out of our logic, and this is part of the game rule of the game that we are playing, is the way we hoodwink ourselves is by attributing powerlessness to nothingness. We don't realize that is a complete logical fallacy. On the contrary, it takes nothing to have something. You wouldn't know what something was without nothing. You wouldn't know what the form is without the background space. You wouldn't be able to see anything unless there were nothing behind your eyes. Now imagine yourself with a spherical eye. See all around. Now it's in the middle. See? Even if I have all this behind me in view, suddenly I will find that there is something in the middle of it all. There's a hole in the middle of reality. Like now, there seems to be not so much a hole but a wall, but any animal which had eyes in the back of its head would have the sensation I'm describing. Now, you may say to me, well, all that's wishful thinking. Because when you're dead, you're dead, see? Now, wait a minute. What's that state of consciousness that talks in that way? This is somebody saying something who wants to make a point. Now, what point does that sort of person want to make? It's like when you're dead, see? Well, that's one of the people who want to rule the world. It's a frightening about death. Death is real, see. I mean, it's just don't indulge in wishful thinking. All you people who dream of an afterlife and heavens and gods and mystical experiences and eternity, all you're just wishy-washy people. You don't face the facts. What facts? How can I face the fact of nothing, which is by definition not a fact? You see? All this is trouble, in whichever way you look at it. So if you really go the whole way and see how you feel at the prospect of vanishing forever, of all your efforts and all your achievements and all your attainments turning into dust, nothingness, what is the feeling? What happens to you? It's a curious thing that in the world's poetry, this is a very common theme. The earthly hope men set their hearts upon turns ashes, or it prospers. And anon, like snow upon the desert's dusty face, lighting a little hour or two is gone. All kinds of poetry emphasizes the theme of transience. And there's a kind of nostalgic beauty to it. The banquet hall deserted after the revelry. All the guests had left, gone their ways. The table with overturned glasses, crumpled napkins, breadcrumbs, dirty knives and forks, slice off. And the laughter echoes only in one's mind. Then the echo goes. The memory, the traces are all gone. of the atmosphere. Can you see, in a way, how that is saying the most real state is the state of nothing? That's what it's going to all come to. But these physicists who think of the energy of the universe running down, dissipating in radiation, gradually, until there's nothing at all left. And for some reason or other, we're supposed to find this depressing. But if somebody is going to argue that the basic reality is nothingness, where does all this come from? Obviously from nothingness. Once again, you get how it looks behind your eyes. So sure enough, you see, this is what is meant in Buddhist philosophy by saying we are all basically nothing. When the sixth patriarch says the essence of your mind, that's how it is behind your eyes, is intrinsically pure. The pure doesn't mean a non-dirty storage state of mind, as it is apt to mean in the word purity. Pure means clear. Void. So, you know the story, when the sixth patriarch was given his office as successor, because he was truly enlightened, there was a poetry contest. And the losing one wrote the idea that the mind, the consciousness, was like a mirror which had to be polished. And constantly one, I have to polish my mirror. I have to purify my mind, see? So that I'm detached and calm and clear-headed, you know, Buddha. But the one who won the contest said, there is no mirror. And the nature of the mind is intrinsically void. So where is there anywhere for dust to go? See? So in this way, by seeing that nothingness is the fundamental reality, and you see it's your reality, then how can anything contaminate you? Or the idea of your being scared and put out and worried and so on, it's just nothing, it's a dream. Because you're really not. But this is the most incredible thing. And the sixth patriarch likewise went on to contrast emptiness of indifference, which is sort of blank emptiness. See, if you think of this nothingness as mere blankness, and you hold on to the idea of blankness, and kind of grisly about it, you haven't understood it. He said nothingness is really like the nothingness of space, which contains the whole universe. All sun, moon, stars, and the mountains and rivers, and the good men and the bad men, and the animals and the insects, the whole bit, all are contained in the void. So out of this void comes everything, and you're it. What else could you think?
Lisa?
Yes.
Could you maybe talk some more about the really funky part you say, where the world is disappearing?
Yes. So as we're talking right now, all there is this. There's nothing else. Everything else is imagination. There's not even a position in where you're looking from. You can't even know it's happening or not happening. The whole world dies. And that's the way it always is. But the humans have the amazing ability to imagine, and it's not that that needs to stop. It's just the position of, this is my life, and I'm sitting here looking at these. So that position will eventually collapse. That's the suffering position.
Would you say there's even behind what gold consciousness? There's something even behind this?
Yeah, I think consciousness is, I don't really know all these details, I think what most people think of as consciousness is another form that comes and goes. But people are so amazing with words now, they describe consciousness in lots of different ways. So I don't know what everyone's meaning by consciousness. But yeah.
It was all about chopping vegetables, you remember? Is it possible that in chopping vegetables that the world is disappearing right
there?
Yeah,
of course it is. Because where is vegetables and where are you?
Yeah.
That's a practical description. If someone said, what are you doing? Oh, I'm cutting vegetables. But in the moment of cutting vegetables, there's no you, there's no world, there's no vegetables. There's just what is, which is absolutely undescribable. And it's not happening or not happening. It's like those lights. It's just not knowable what it is. And that's happening all the time, the disappearance of everything. And it's that no-thing, which Alan Watts was talking about. But it's the person is always filling in the blanks and saying, I'm cutting vegetables and I came from somewhere. I came from the past, and it tells a story of how it got there. And that's the illusion. There's practical description of the body, but that's not an actuality. That's just practical. In the moment of chopping vegetables, that's all there is.
Yes. You could all also be chopping vegetables and lose yourself to a thought when your mind is wandering off, and then you come back to the vegetables.
Yeah.
But that's not it, I imagine that's...
No, but even losing itself to a thought is it as well. Like, ultimately everything's it, but it's only the person that's separate from the thought, or claiming the thought, that's the issue. So even being lost in a thought isn't suffering. All there is that thought, is that imagination, no different from cutting the vegetables.
But that's also the world disappearing then?
Yeah, the world can disappear, but... What happens is that person that claims the thought, when that's there, it seems like you have a thought and you came from somewhere.
That is behind the thought. So
sorry?
That is afterwards. After the wandering off.
Yeah, most of the time.
But during the wandering off, the...
That's all there is, and there's no world again. So say that you're imagining... Even if you're imagining a woman's leg, which seems really unspiritual, or woman's boobs or something... Mm-hmm. Unless there's that person there that's claiming it, then that's all there is, and there's no world, there's no boobs, there's just imagining happening, which is no different from chopping vegetables. So thoughts aren't the problem.
No. I'm glad you say that, because I was convinced that thoughts were a problem.
No, it's the one that claims it.
But when I was examining this, I could see that there's also a disappearing within the thoughts.
Yes. That's not the problem. And what agony to try not to have thoughts or stay in the present moment or believe it's about. It's not, that's part of this.
So there's really no difference between the thoughts and the vegetables?
It's all made of the same. And there's not even the person. That's no different from everything as well, but what the appearance of the person just gives suffering, because it's horizontal, you know, you've got here, and that's the lie, that's the illusion. And it's not just appearing and disappearing in no world, it's you got here, you are this body, and you know what you're in relationship with, or you know what's happening. That's how wars begin. I know this, you are that. Not that even wars could not happen, wars could still happen, but it's like suffering happens with I know something, and the main I know something is I am a body, I am moving through time. Time appears here, and just with practicality, practical function. And when we're speaking, often the whole world's disappearing, and then after, the mind can come back and go, ah, I understood what she said. But it's actually when we're speaking, there's just, the room's gone, and I'm like, oh. Or I didn't understand what she says, maybe it says afterwards.
But I can see why those things are very similar, the vegetables and the dots, because the degree of intimacy is exactly the same.
Yeah.
And that is like what makes it identical.
Yeah. And it's all about the intimacy, being absolutely lost in it. And when we say lost in it, it's like, what's actually lost is you.
Mm.
It's just what is, and we say lost in it, like we forget ourselves.
Yeah.
That's what we like about drink, or drugs, or laughter. We forget ourselves. And we often, people in England say, you know, after a lot of laughter or something, or they're really enjoying it, they're like, oh, I forgot myself.
Yeah.
And this is just beautiful, forgetting.
Being out of your mind.
Yeah. Out of your mind. Out of my mind with joy, but then the person often focuses on the joy and thinks it was about the joy, and it wasn't about the joy or the laughter, it was the disappearance of someone that thinks it knows something.
So is this disappearance similar to disappearance in your sleep or death?
Yes.
Similarly. Is it exactly the same or is it similar? Or you cannot know this?
You can't know this, but in sleep there's just nothing. But yes, there's an absolute absorption in just nothing. Whereas this is nothing and everything. But you could also say there's nothing and everything in the sleep. But yes, it is. There's no person in the sleep. And we're afraid of that. It's so funny because we imagine death like that, and it's funny.
So it really has everything to do with Alan Watts' quote.
What did he say?
This is about the nothing that is the mother of everything.
Yeah, the void. Mm-hmm. But the Buddhists also say, Buddhism was, where this body started as well, although I forget a lot of the Buddhist sutras, but also Buddhists, or Buddha, who knows who's in it, also try to make it very clear, because there can be an attachment or an identification with nothing. Everything is that nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like there is a nothing that you can see or know. You can't imagine nothing. You can't see nothing. It is everything as well. The void is everything. It sounds terrible, void, but that's the freedom of it all, that it disappears. That it appears and it disappears. It appears and it's brand new and it disappears. And that's, like, this whole world is, it's not about making a perfect world, this whole world is about creation and destruction. If it's happening to someone, that's terrible. Terrible creation and destruction, and this is it's so hard for the human being with complicated thinking, because there's a bit of a comprehension of this, that everything gets destroyed. They can't really understand anything, human beings, it's only very limited thinking, but the freedom isn't in trying to save that or stop that. The freedom is the fact that it's going, it's gone, it's gone, it's gone.
Not being afraid of it any longer.
There's nothing wrong with the fear. The body's going to naturally have fear with the destruction of itself. It's the person that's in relationship with the fear. So you know, when we were talking about the intimacy of vegetables, there can be that intimacy with fear, but there's an absolute loss in fear, and there's not somebody that's aware of fear and trying to get out of fear and talking about fear. when, as you see, the my dog, I was going to say the dog with me. My dog, just to put it in normal language. My dog. has fear, but there's no suffering there. Like that, there is fear of humans, but there's no suffering there because there's no, there's an absolute intimacy, like the lostness in thoughts, like the lostness in vegetables. And there's not a problem. Fear is not a problem.
I can see how this would happen if you jumped off a cliff, for instance.
Yeah, there's just lostness in fear.
Yes, falling lostness in fear. Yes.
Yeah.
Mm. Because it's a very total experience.
Yes.
Yeah. It's demanding everything of you.
Did you jump off the bridge yesterday?
Oh, yes. So I learned from them.
It's not, it's not
the when I closed my eyes and I went like this.
Because there's nobody in there repeating back, oh fuck, I shouldn't have this fear, why did you jump off the bridge? It's just full on fear. What's going to happen to me when I hit the bottom? Maybe before standing at the edge of the cliff or the bridge.
Well, I didn't take the time thinking about all
this. Yeah, you see, that's it. That's it. That is it.
I just went for it.
It's just happening.
Yes.
It's amazing because we often, liberation or whatever this is that I'm talking about, is often associated with something spiritual, but this is so ordinary. What's being talked about, and even the way I talk about it with the nothing and the words and the complication, it makes it sound so much more spiritual or godly, maybe not godly, than what it is. It's so simple, this childlikeness. Like, as a child, it was just, if you hit the child's hitting its sibling, that's all there is. The child's beginning to get a sense of self. A lot of the time, that sense of self isn't there. It's just hitting child, and that's it. It's just hitting. It's not even I'm hitting my brother. It's just the brother takes the food or the toy, and there's whoosh. Well, there's playing for nothing, for no reason. Eating for no reason. It's not I'm eating because this food is going to make me da 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 and I'll be enlightened. It's just eating for the joy of eating. The joy makes it sound a bit too romantic. Well,
somehow the jumping off the bridge was very appealing to me. But I would never have done it if somebody else hadn't done it before me. Yeah.
So when the elephant, we always come back to animals. So there was this video I saw on YouTube of like 10 lions trying to take down an elephant, and it went on for hours. Like there's these people that were filming this pack of lions for like 3 months, and this was so out of the ordinary that lions would attempt to take down an elephant. And it went on for hours and hours and hours. Now to a human, that's horrific, because it imagines it. But in that moment, the elephant isn't imagining itself being attacked. There is just full-on extreme sensation happening. But it's not being attacked. It's not happening to the elephant. The elephant's not going to lose its life. has no idea of its life. And that's the freedom of the animals. It has no idea of itself. So it's just full on to the human, though. It's like, oh, how humiliating. It goes on for so many hours. I couldn't take that. But the animal, it's just full on pain. And it has no sense of, this has happened to me for hours. Why are they doing this to me? And for the lion, it has no sense of its right or wrongness, or it did bad, but it's just acting out as well. And for the lion, it's reasonably more pleasurable. You think? We don't know. And that's most remarkable.
The lion becomes the action.
Yeah, it's just action. Yeah.
Just action.
Yeah. And,
there's something similar, but maybe slightly more disturbing, with killer whales hunting another whale. It's a whale mother and her child.
Yeah.
But they did it very skillfully. It was like they were practicing their hunting skills. But all they did is, when they killed the child, all they ate was the tongue and let the rest. And the mother was very, really distressed and was trying to revive her
yeah.
child. Afterwards.
She most of you wouldn't have left it for weeks or days. And
she was constantly with it, but they cleverly separated.
Yeah, oh yeah. But the freedom that's, even though these things are so full on, the mind wants to ignore these things, because the human looks at it from the perspective of me being that killer whale, me being the child, me being the mother with that taken away, and it's imagining itself in time. And then we look at the responses of the animals as if they are also have a person in there too, whereas there is just pure experiencing happening there. And although the experiencing is absolute, what we would categorise as pain, there's an absolute intimacy with it. It's not happening to her, it's not happening to her child. It's the reaction is of the body is to save the child, but she doesn't know that's her reaction. It's just reaction happening. She doesn't know her child's been killed, although her body will most probably fight to its death for it.
Sorry, it's just a silly thing. I find it confusing because killer whales are so intelligent
yeah.
that they have different cultures.
Yeah.
And one pod of killer whales would never hunt mammals. They'd only hunt fish, and that's their culture.
Yeah.
And then there's another type which,
yeah.
you know, they're dangerous, and dolphins can't play with them. They'll kill the,
yeah.
the dolphin.
Yeah.
And that's just us just programming. They still don't have an awareness of their culture like the human does, or the human seems to. So it is really. Dogs are insanely intelligent hunters. They will go on a hill with an animal, and they're so instinctual. There's 10 of them will go around the hill, a couple of them will go to the top, and they'll bring it down, and they'll all come at it like this, around the hill. And they can't even, sometimes they're so far apart, they can't even hear or smell each other. How the fuck do they know that beforehand? They all do this, but they do it. They haven't got the ability to think about that.
I know tribal people sometimes say that the wolves are almost as intelligent as humans.
They're not as intelligent they haven't got the intelligence of, like, I am a body, or I know this about themselves, but they've got amazing intelligence written into their bodies, but not the ability to see themselves as a wolf like the human does. And that's just where suffering comes from. That's a simple mistake of I am a body. For the wolves, it's full on experiencing, and the intelligence isn't about thinking about it. It's an impulse, like the ants have the ability to find the food when it seems impossible that they smell it or sense it. And they go in these lines to the food and then pass
yeah.
it back. Because how. If they haven't got language, how would they be able to know who they are? How would they know that they are a body and that they're separate? And that divide only comes from that. Otherwise, it's intimacy of experience.
But language, the moment you speak, there's a deterioration in the energy in your communication. I've noticed it seems to be programmed in. I noticed as soon as I use language to describe something I've realised, it's like I've corrupted it.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're in nature walking, the communication is more finer.
Yeah.
I mean, if we ever once spoke telepathically, it would have been a purer communication.
Yeah. We are speaking like that as well. There is a speaking that's happening, which is body and energy as well.
I saw, maybe it just pops up, like I saw a movie where this girl was, when she was a baby, she was only brought up by dogs, and she had the same behavior as dogs. She was like a baby, abandoned by her mother, and then she was no human, like she had only. She couldn't see, I think, but she was like a dog.
She wouldn't be suffering then. Was it stupid with that?
Yeah.
This is awful, we've got to rehabilitate. Shall we take a 5-minute break to cool down? Close the body down. Actually, just going outside, it's cooler now. We say 5 minutes, it's always 10, but we'll hope for 5. I was talking with Philip in the break time. It was just a brief conversation. She was asking me to make out about animals. To be honest with you, I don't really know. I really don't know how things are working. And everything I say all comes to nonsense at the end of the day. But sometimes when talking about these things, there's a remembering of that freedom that's here. And sometimes with animals, it can be obvious or that can be remembered. But really, all my theories and all the stuff that I say isn't it. And I go down with the ship quickly. Just ask me complicated questions, I'm like, oh, I don't know. It's just more the sense of it. What does that even mean? Everything. I mean, even the sense of it. What the hell? The sense. What, the sight of it? The feeling of it? I mean, no. Words are so funny. So many different meanings, and we think we're communicating.
There's something in the beauty though, before the words, huh? That there's a feeling, I say, in the space between the words, of the love that comes between the words. It's not really as much as a dollar. So we can all go down with the ship with Captain.
Yeah, you won't see us on the fighting for non-duality.
Yeah,
right. Lines on the ship.
Yeah,
that's good. We don't know.
It's funny, so.
I really love the side effect that non-duality has on the body-mind mechanisms, because like we were talking about my brother once before, and my brother often suffers quite a lot. I don't like to talk about the brother too much on the sort of thing. And often people are giving him advice, and I just think, what arrogance. He doesn't know. They're always telling him what he should do, he should eat better, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And it's funny, we get on so well now because I'm not trying to change him. He sits there and he's upset and he looks upset, or he's happy, he's happy.
It's kind of like a loving neutrality.
Yeah. And it's nice to see that in body mind mechanism. Mm-hmm. It's a side effect. It's not, we'll get some that are really forceful maybe, but often there's not an assumption that you know how to fix people or how to fix the life.
Because if you want to fix something, it means that there's something wrong.
Yeah.
But the judgment
that's
happening is not what should be happening.
And also that you know better than
that. Yeah, but that's the arrogance.
Yeah. That you know how to live life better.
Mm-hmm.
It goes in all sense of fixing. It's not then that there's not spending time with them or physically helping them, but really when it comes to the words, you don't know the best way. I would never speak about non-duality with him unless he asked.
Within what?
Unless he asked. I would never. Occasionally we speak about Jesus. Not much.
In that world. I can just use it. Now we have a reading from the book of Matthew, page 20, chapter 3, verse 9 to 11.
Now all the things
we talk about Jesus. What else? No, because people that are having problems, they're already having problems with their problems.
Yes.
And then the do-gooders come along and say, I have a better way to do it. And then if the person maybe, you know, or my experience of when I was in problems, has another problem because they're not meeting up to the expectations of another person. And it's just adding on to the, it's adding on to the suffering. I don't know what's adding, but it's like I said, it's just happening.
Well, what do we know?
Hey, your brother seems happier when you don't tell him how he should live. Huh?
Yeah. Or from him. I don't even know that. I just don't assume that I know better.
They're not like a feeling of wanting to tell him, like, but you're not that fair.
No.
Yeah,
originally, when I first got into non-duality, I attempted to preach it.
My sister. Like you're just talking to yourself when that happens. It's like, Maybe exactly. You're in the process of convincing yourself, and then you're like, right, guys, right?
Yeah.
And then when that's settled in you, you're like, there's something else.
Lisa, for me it feels like you are giving permission to feel for myself that there is nobody inside. It's like from conditioning from the childhood, conditioning that I have to do it right and perfect and good and trying hard. It's like a contraction.
Yeah.
Like, okay, yes, some must is there.
Yeah.
And yeah, your presence, or even or what you are speaking, or however, it gives the feeling there's no need.
I don't have to be someone.
Yes, I don't have to be someone. And yeah, I can be open to feel that there's nobody.
Relief.
Yeah.
It's not better at being someone. And it's so funny that society has always taught that to be someone. It's a little bit scary sometimes. It comes to nothing.
Yeah, but it's also very light, very
yeah.
Open.
Yeah. That's the nature of everything. Like it's only that illusion of self which is giving that tight, small appearance. But that also is it as well. Like I don't need to ever demonize the appearance of or the illusion of the person. It's not the devil. So it's really not to do with me, but that sounds really abstract, but it's you. Just this happens to be the form in which it's presented, but you is weird as well, but
that's the love, that's not the love, that's mm-hmm. freedom, and that's the feeling of the maternal love, like an unconditional maternal love.
Mm-hmm. And I always say there's no person, there's no you, mm-hmm. and then I'm going to say it all comes to you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not got anything to do with its form, but it
mm-hmm.
disappears in that way.
But that's the grace of it, it comes through you, the form that's sitting there.
Which is you.
Which is me, too. Thank you. But sometimes it has to be heard from another.
From seemingly another.
No, from seemingly another.
Oh, I've got a great cartoon to show you all. Maybe you guys follow me on Facebook so you see these things, but
something.
Are you on Facebook, too? You are on Facebook.
Mm, sometimes.
I've never seen
and
you on
comes
that.
And goes.
And you're called Phyllis on them.
Mm-hmm.
I've never seen Phyllis on Facebook. Just on Skype.
Yeah. No, I write you on Skype.
Yeah. So some people aren't going to see it because
mm.
I can't do... That would be fun for you, stream. Oh, yes. You'll get it for the words as well. The ones that won't see it. This is too funny. So if you guys want to see this on YouTube, you have to look up on YouTube, What is My True Nature, Part 1.
You could turn it on the stand, you could do it too.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea. Oh, yeah.
I can put it on there.
But she can put it and give it to her own.
Okay. This goes quite well, but
not you.
That's
all. You've seen it.
Yeah, but we can give it to them.
You just meant to just come by.
Somebody.
Because of their kind.
Oh, very good. So I just say because it's a bit quiet, yeah, they want to turn off the lights, it's just a bit of sweat from them. Okay, go.
If I'm having problems, can you help me?
What is the matter?
I've been on a spiritual path for many years.
Why we for
the second? Oh my
god. On your mark, get set.
Okay. I will be free.
I think the competition's going to have to be the bigger one.
Yeah.
We can do it on the projector again tonight.
But they can watch the picture and leave
out
the
sound. Okay.
I'm having problems. Can you help me?
What is the matter?
I've been on a spiritual path for many years. They say if I become self-realized and understand my true nature, I will be free. I have been meditating every day, but I am still not clear about certain things.
I may be able to help, but first let me ask you, do you not just focus on getting more successful and buying more toys? Find your soulmate and start a family. If that doesn't work, go to a bar and find someone to have sex with.
Yes, those things are all very interesting, but they don't satisfy me for very long. There is this nagging feeling that I am missing the true meaning of life. I have an existential anxiety that won't go away.
I understand. I'm going to tell you a secret. It's something that many wise ones have been saying for a long time, but very few listen. If you really hear what I'm saying, you will share their wisdom. You will know what they know, and you will see that you are just like them.
Okay, I am listening.
If you deeply understand this, you won't be afraid anymore. You will see the rest of the world as your own self, and you will feel love growing within you and without you.
Okay, I am hanging by a fucking thread now. Tell me.
Okay, here is the deal. You, me, the grass, these trippy-looking trees, and the whole world around us is all just an appearance.
What do you mean, an appearance? And how does that help me?
It is all an appearance. We are like characters in a cartoon. But there is a deeper reality behind it all. You can be aware of it as a kind of energy or presence. This presence is animating the entire appearance.
Wait, you mean we're just cartoon characters?
Yes, that's what we appear as, but we are actually the energy or presence that is animating the cartoon. The closest thing I could use to describe our true nature is pixels.
Pixels?
Yes, pixels.
Wait, did you say pixels?
Yes, pixels.
Where are they? I don't see them anywhere.
You'll never be able to see, hear, smell, taste, or touch the pixels, because they do...
Oh, a pixel is when we draw the little thing.
It's what the computer screen is made out of.
Yes.
It's funny because the TV blocks the internet, so I just have to move it. Sorry, guys, over there. Is it further? Just go back and see.
No, Chase, or touch the pixels, because they don't exist within the cartoon. The cartoon world appears on the pixels. We have to sense the pixels, our true self, in a different way, a way that is not possible to describe. And to be clear, pixels is just a word, an approximation of what we actually are.
How do you know we are really the pixels and not just these characters?
Well, for one thing, these characters come and go. They are always changing. The pixels are always here, always the same.
How do you know that?
Let me ask you a question. Did you choose to be born?
No, I don't think so.
Of course you didn't. You, as this cartoon character, were forced into this cartoon world. The pixels were there before your cartoon body appeared. The pixels were there as you gasped for your first breath and opened your eyes for the first time. Only someone who is crazy would choose to go through all of this crap.
So the pixels are behind all this? But why?
Our cartoon minds will likely never get a good answer to the question why. But one could say that it is in the nature of the pixels to create and animate the cartoon. The pixels are able to experience many things through these characters. Without the cartoon and these characters, the pixels would be all alone, doing nothing.
Well, if you are really the pixels, can you control what happens here in the cartoon? Maybe you can make it so I can realize I am the pixels too.
Unfortunately, it does not work that way. You have to see this for yourself. There are laws within the cartoon that cannot be broken.
But how will knowing all this help me?
No matter what happens within the cartoon, no matter how good or bad it gets, deep down inside I know that I'm safe as the pixels. I exist before, during, and after the cartoon as the pixels. Everything in the cartoon appears on what I really am. The pixels behind my eyes are no different than the pixels behind your eyes, so we are the same. This is the true meaning of love. So wherever I go, and whoever I talk to, I know it is just me talking to myself, pixels to pixels.
I think I am beginning to understand.
Good. The fact that you are so interested in this is a good sign. Most just want to explore the cartoon, and not explore what is behind it all.
Thank you.
You are welcome. My cartoon wife is waiting for me, and if I leave, I will never hear the end of it.
I understand. Farewell, my friend.
Yes, farewell.
It's written so well.
Yeah.
And I'll never hear the end of it if I'm late. She'll moan at me if I'm late.
What is the name of that cartoon again?
I don't know if it's got a...
Or how do you find it?
It's called What Is My True Nature, Part 1. But I don't know if it's got a name as a party. It's so sweet. He's got a whole series of them. That's just number one. The Advaita trap.
Okay, fine. I'll tell you the news.
And if that doesn't work, go back to a bar and have random sex with a stranger. And then he goes, yes, that is all very interesting. Not good, interesting.
We go down, down, down.
The neighbors think we're freaks.
So can you put that on your website so you don't find it?
It is on Facebook.
I think I blocked it.
Huh?
Well, maybe I didn't.
Yes, I have already. Yes,
okay. You can find it.
It was funny because in Greece there was this lady, she was so sweet, and I started telling her about pixel cartoons. She was like, that's a bit cold. And then after a while, I just sat there thinking about the pixel idea, and then she went, hang on, that's love. She was really sweet.
Do you know the Velvet Rabbit?
No.
The Velvet Rabbit.
Yeah, it's on YouTube or?
Let you have a look. The story about a
Velveteen Rabbit.
He comes alive. It's about a boy who has a little.
Mm-hmm.
The Velvet Rabbit.
Yeah, I
see. Velveteen.
Velveteen, 24 minutes, 7. We'll stop in a moment. Okay, I'm thinking anything else. Anything to say, anything else? Anything? Practical things?
Dinner is like soon.
Yeah, I'm just bubbling.
I'm not telling you.